Good morning, ladies. Excuse me. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast for the 5th of June. June. I can never get over that. Terry and June. How funny. In the year that we are calling 2026. Cheers. I have a cup of coffee here. Actually, it's not very full. I must have. I've only got one eye, as you know, and sometimes when you're filling things, it appears with the one eye, because I don't have the 3D effect, that it's fuller than it is. And then when I pick it up and look at it more at eye level, I realise, oh, it's almost a third empty. But never mind. It probably means that I can have another cup of coffee afterwards, or a little later. It's at 6:30 in the morning. The sun is out, which is rather nice, although there are dangerous-looking clouds. I haven't actually been outside as yet, and so who knows if the old chemtrailers are doing their thing, probably. We know that's what they do. Yesterday was a strange old day, very windy day yesterday. I'm glad I wasn't having to go anywhere, really, certainly driving-wise, in the van. It can get buffeted by the wind. Not a fun experience. But I'm very lucky at the moment, whereas in the past I had to get up and go off to various jobs and things, no matter what the weather, icy, cold, blizzards and things like that, that one used to have to do. The luxury now is one doesn't have to do that. I suppose you could call it a luxury. And of course, at that point, there was income behind the journey. Now, income is a different thing altogether. Yes, but let's not dwell on that too much as I dive into my cup of coffee and the chat with you on, it must be a Friday. I'm waiting in today, this morning. I waited in yesterday for a delivery of something, and I'm waiting in today for a different delivery. These are tractor parts. When we bought the tractor, and a lovely tractor it is, the Fordson Major, 1954, and it we've enjoyed it very much. It's been very useful, just in tiny little jobs. But when we bought it, I hadn't realised it had hydraulic arms that go up and down at the back, which means you can attach things onto these hydraulic arms. Things like a mower, a plough, a harrow, a rotavator, you know, all sorts of different bits and bobs, as well as a trailer. We have a trailer. That doesn't need to go up and down, but certain attachments needs to raise and lower, depending on what the attachment is and where the attachment fittings are. And then there's a sort of a leveller thing, and another part of it, which I think can ease the amount of up and down movement over bumps and things, so that you can be more fixed if you want something to really bash into the bumps and level them out, say, I don't know, on a harrow perhaps, and others where you want it to go with the undulations of the land a bit more, perhaps. Anyway, what we didn't realise is the guys... Excuse me, I was just going to yawn. The guys who sold the tractor to us, they hadn't used the tractor for ploughing or those kind of agricultural jobs. They'd used it for towing things. And they'd rebuilt the tractor and done an excellent job on that. But the bit that they, because they hadn't used it, the two little arms, not the main hydraulic arms, I don't know what they're really called, but there's two little attachment arms to them, and they were seized up. And now, these guys who rebuilt the tractor after finding it in a hedge had no reason, if they weren't adding these sort of attachments, farming, agricultural attachments, to even notice or to the need to undo them, because they didn't need the hydraulic arms to go as far down, right down to the ground. They would go down, but they would be about 8 inches from the ground. But they just needed to go that little bit further. Well, they wouldn't have needed that. So the bits that they had on there were just seized up, rusted up, completely rusted up and did not move. And unless you knew that they needed to hydraulically one cylinder inside another cylinder, like in a telescope, where you can slide up and down one cylinder within another. If you didn't know that's what it, that was its purpose and how it worked, or even if they did know, they didn't need that facility for everything that they were using. They were using the tractor, as I say, to tow to tow sleeping, what would you call houses, not houses, traction engine sleeping wagons. I don't know what the official term is, but that's the sort of thing. Like a shepherd's hut, only much bigger, that a traction engine chap would have towed at the back of his traction engine years ago. And so these guys were into restoration stuff, and they, I think they had a couple of these big traction engine sleeping houses, whatever they're called, and they would go to events. And so they used the tractor, because I don't think they had a traction engine, but they had these traction engine sleeping houses, whatever they're called, living houses, and they would take them to various events to show off, you know, steam shows and steam fairs, and they used the tractor to tow them about until they got themselves a steam engine, I guess. So the tractor had its had a limited use for them, but it had to be up to a certain spec in order to do just that job. So anyway, point is, when we bought it, we didn't know, and so the hydraulic arms do go up and down. They just don't go down to the very floor. So, and they demonstrated that, but I don't know that they mentioned or even were aware. So anyway, I'm going on about the same thing and trying to explain it so I know that it's explained, if you see what I mean, which is something I overdo. Anyway, the point is, I need those because I want to attach this grass topper, which is like a lawnmower, and potentially a plough and a harrow and other things. And I need these two parts. So the great thing about Fords and Majors is that, like many of the vintage tractors, there are a number of companies that support these things. They're not, as I imagined, extremely hard to find the parts for them, that you would have to go into a metal workshop and fashion all the bits yourself. I dare say that's an option for some people, but because they are much loved vintage vehicles, the companies are selling these bits to people all around the world. And there are a lot of companies that are doing it. It's not just like one obscure company, you know, in the deepest, darkest county somewhere or other, and that you have to have a nudge and a wink to know where it is. Not at all. There are quite a few of these companies. And the other great thing is these parts, which you would imagine would be extremely expensive because these tractors are no longer manufactured and these parts have to be specially manufactured. No, very reasonable. In fact, I would say far more reasonable than buying parts for modern cars these days. You know, you can buy headlamps, for example, for your tractor. And if you bought to buy a headlamp for my transit van, it would cost quite a lot of money. And this is these headlamps, I don't know what they are, something like £40. They might be £40 each, so £80 for a pair, or something like that. It might have been less than that. But I was actually surprised just how inexpensive some of the parts are that you require for a tractor. And I thought, blimey, you know, if it almost, apart from the chassis, you could buy all the bits for a tractor and make one from scratch almost. So it is absolutely amazing and quite fun looking up these bits and thinking, oh, I might change that and get a new version of that. because the one I've got is rusted and dented or wearing out or whatever. And you could restore the tractor to its earlier glory, which I think is a fantastic thing, because these things are simple in their design. They are effective in what they do, and they're cheap to run. And people are paying thousands and thousands for all sorts of farm machinery when the earlier simple things kind of got to a point before they went a bit mad. Admittedly, it is slower than a modern tractor. It's not as high up. I don't know what advantage that is. And it probably can't pull as much. And it's slower. Did I mention that? Yes, I think I did. It's an early vintage tractor. But for our needs, anyway, it's absolutely brilliant. And I love it. And it's got character. It's got a lot of character. Which is also a charm. It is a charm for somebody who loves to have a foot in yesteryear. That sort of thing is great. Anyway, so we're waiting in for these two arms, which will arrive apparently today. I don't want to miss them. And then I will shoot up to the land. They're supposed to be here before lunch. Shoot up to the land and fix them on the tractor and see if it works, which would be marvellous. There are a couple of other things which I understand I have to loosen. I was speaking to a chap about it, and he says, yes, you've got these two, I forget what they had, a funny name, and you need to make sure they're loosened. So I'm hoping they're not seized up, but they are nuts and screws. And there are sort of techniques, obviously things like WD-40 can be sprayed on them, but apparently also you can try putting things into a fire, heat them up to a certain degree, and then whack them with a lump hammer, and that can knock a certain amount of the rust off. Well, I did actually try that with one of these arms that I've ordered, and it was so seized you couldn't. Now, it is possible that there are baths that you could put it in some sort of soak. And if that's the case, and I can get it working, I could then potentially sell it, or give it to somebody who needs one. I think the vintage tractor fraternity, as it were, are very friendly and helpful people. Like any hobbyist thing that you're into that is just off the beaten track or a bit obscure to most people, there's a certain sort of camaraderie and shared interest, of course. And so people are very helpful. And isn't that a lovely thing to know? Because that's human nature, isn't it? We're all pushed into a sort of mainstream living thing where it is very much dog fight dog or dog eat dog, as they say. And yet you join some of these old clubs and societies. Not that I've actually joined a club and society, but I have seen on forums and things, and even on YouTube channels, people in certain interest groups are most helpful and delightful. Now, I see a lot of people in the pipe smoking fraternity on YouTube, which you might think is a bit weird. But again, same thing. People are very helpful and say, about pipes and choosing a pipe or mending a pipe or cleaning a pipe or different ways of smoking or types of tobacco or recommending this and recommending that and sharing and giving each other things. As I say, people have given me pipes in the past, which has been absolutely delightful. And I've got three, which I'm going to demonstrate on the next pipe video. Which is wonderful to do. And people have given me tobacco. I've sent pipes out to people and samples of tobacco myself. So, it is it's a lovely thing, these fraternity groups. And I think we should see more of them, because that's where you see human nature at its best. people helping one another on projects and topics, and it's great to see. And if only that could spill into everyday life. I guess the everyday life that we have has, as I say, it's got this sort of strange dog-eat-dog type of thing. And I guess it's because there's no real shared interest in a specific loved topic, I imagine. Anyway, so, yeah, it's got to hang about for these two bits this morning. Let me have another slurp. I was going to try and make a video yesterday on the Richard Vobes channel, but you know, at the moment, a little uninspired by things. I've said a lot of things, and my last video did reasonably well. Julia said it had something like 24,000 views, which is pretty nice. And then I had one before that, which had a lot more. And I think people may have, you know, sometimes the title is a little ambiguous, and I think people sort of thought I was going to talk about something else, and perhaps they were disappointed to find out that I was talking about more mundane things, I suppose, to a lot of people, but important to some. It's difficult because, you know, sometimes you can have a title that sums up what you're talking about, but people don't quite understand what it's about, and they either don't watch it, or they watch it and it's not the sort of thing they want to watch. It depends on how the algorithm posts it out, I suppose. But anyway, yes, uninspired, because I've said a lot of things, and I know that it's very easy to say more and you just ramble on, and you could be saying the same old thing, and I don't know. There comes a point where you think, is it worth it? And you could say that about the Naked Englishman, I suppose. There's sometimes when I'm rambling on about the same old thing, and of course I think that people do like listening to the same old thing. After all, television does exactly that. I don't, as you know, watch television. But I remember, you know, certain programmes like cookery programmes or What's in Your Attic type programmes for selling. Each week or each episode is the same thing. And people, I suppose there's a comfort. They kind of like a certain format and they go back, like the whatever it is, the ballroom dancing one that Bruce Forsyth used to do. Week after week, people would just do different dances and people would go back. I mean, I can't watch those sort of things. So I watch one and go, oh, that was interesting. But I now can't watch another one because it's the same thing, isn't it? That these bunch of people now going to another dance. Well, didn't we see that last week? Oh, yeah. And the week before that? Yeah, that's. I don't really need to see it again. But people, I suppose people do like the repetition of something. So, who knows? But then, you know, I'm somebody who does like and originality, and I like things to be new and different, and I suppose to a certain degree, one is I'm seeking that, but in another way, that doesn't help. When I was pitching a lot of my ideas for television programmes, and I would go and make them into pilots and spend months putting together videos back in the, when was I doing this, sort of back in the 90s and early 2000s, I would pitch these programme ideas, and they took months to put together, and I'd gather people to help me film things, and I would always get back these letters from the commissioning editors, because I thought, well, they've got cookery programmes, they've got this sort of programme, they've got that sort of programme, they surely don't want more of that, they want something original, something different, and I would make something different. And then the commissioning editors would come back and say, yes, what an original idea that is, but I don't think it would fit on our channel. And I did a course at the BBC for a week as a presenter's course I did some years ago now. And at the end of the course, the idea was to present an idea to real commissioning editors. And the chap running the course at BBC Wood Lane said, when you present these ideas, they've got tons of cookery programs and, you know, hoarding programs and what's in the attic and gardening things. Pitch them something new. Pitch them something different. They, you know, they will be pitched hundreds of different variations on what's growing in my garden, or how to do up your house, or that sort of thing, or buying a house on the continent. You know, they'll have hundreds of those. They don't want any more of those. So I went with a bag of ideas that I already had. And you just wrote them down into a sort of opening paragraph, I think. And anyway, so there was an evening they set up, and they got these commissioning editors from heads of departments. And they knew that they were, it was an exercise more than a genuine commission. It was just an exercise where you could meet the commissioners and you could pitch your idea, like an elevator pitch, at this sort of drinks event, and for about an hour, I think it was on for, and then you had the chance to, they would say why it wasn't a good idea or why it was a good idea and what sort of thing you would have to do to elevate it to make it a bit more interesting to them. So it was a useful exercise. I suppose if you wanted to pitch an idea as a presenter with you as the presenter, if you see what I mean. So anyway, up we went to the event, and I went with the usual bag of ideas that I'd had and already thrashed out, so I was able to sort of put them into an elevator pitch, and met some of these executives, these commissioning editors, and pitched the ideas, and they all pretty much said the same. I met about three of them, I think, in this room. You didn't have a lot of time, but I met three of them. And I was telling them my ideas, and they said, "Ah, oh, yes, this is very interesting. That's a very interesting idea, very novel, original idea. It's very good. I quite like that." He says, "But unfortunately, we wouldn't accept that sort of thing on here at the BBC. It's not the sort of thing that would go down really with the top execs. You see, what we really want is another cooking program." Another gardening program or another household, do up your household program. And I said, "I don't understand, you're full of these," and this is what the other people were saying you didn't want. And they said, "Well, it's, you know, the trouble is we've got these programs, as you know, but they've been going for some time, they're a bit tired, people are not watching them in the numbers that we would like. But we know that they hold interest. So a variation on the same theme is what people will watch in large numbers. An original idea which might capture the imagination of a much smaller number of people is great, but it's not really what we're here for. We have to get the bigger number." And so what was fascinating, it was a complete opposite of what these people were saying. And in a way, it was, in one side of things, it was a useless exercise. And in another side of things, it told me that the BBC is, well, all mainstream people at the time, and probably still, it's the lowest common denominator. Get as many bums on seats for these programmes as you possibly can. Of course, at those times, I wasn't really aware of the complete... Well, I was to a degree, because I'd had my... had I, at that point, had Snug and Cosy? I think I had Snug and Cosy. I'm really trying to remember now whether I'd had the success of the children's television. Maybe I hadn't. I must have done. That must have been my background. Yes. Anyway, it's very difficult, some of the memories, you know, of when things happened. But the point was, they weren't that interested in original ideas. And I thought, came away thinking, right, what is the point? I think it was, yes, I'd been doing The Bald Explorer, which, of course, had been much later than Snug and Cosy, of course. Yes, I'd been doing that. Of course I had. So this was in, I don't know, it must have been in 2003. When was I starting? Or later than that. Oh yes, it was after my eye removal, so it was about 2010, so it wasn't that long ago. Well, it seems long ago, but anyway, point is, it was some time ago. I don't think, but not too long ago, so I don't think things have changed. And some of the programs that they were talking about are still on, as far as I can tell. Not that I watch TV, as you know. So there you go. Anyway, so I realised that actually YouTube is probably a better medium for me because of the diversity that you can go into a different niche, and people all around the world can decide to choose that particular niche because of the number of programs that you could do. I suppose with terrestrial television, I can understand their point. They only have, I say only, they're filling 24 hours of in a day, and there are peak times and the peak shows. They want to get as many people to watch, and so you're going to end up with the most bland, most basic stuff that people will watch. Having said that, of course, when you think of groundbreaking television like Monty Python, The Young Ones, and favourites like the Two Ronnies or Eric Sykes type programmes, which or even Kenny Everett type things, when you get a format that is different but works, people will come to it. But it's a risk for these these programme producers, broadcasters, because it may not, and they don't want to lose an audience to the other channel. So I can understand the mechanics of it. Of course, you've got all the business of the egos and the bias and the mainstream narrative that needs to be pushed and everything else when you're dealing with television. And I'm glad I really have walked away from that because I just don't like it. I don't like any of that, and I don't want to be associated with it. But as a medium, it's fantastic. Of course, that medium is on YouTube. However, having said that, he says, stretching and yawning, involuntarily, there are other mediums that leave more to the imagination, such as radio and writing and books. Are cheaper to produce, for one thing. But we have moved on from that era of people reading books or listening to the radio or audio or podcasts even. I mean, I'm sure people do listen in quite large numbers, but still video seems to be on top. And it's video that is the thing that you can monetize, which is a real shame. However, if people want something that is different and original, and unique, and they want to be challenged with their, or use their cerebral activities in their brains, I think that's where audio and the written word in books is where it's really at. And I don't think that video, I think video just dumbs things down a little bit because of its all-encompassing nature. It's, you give it its divided attention, undivided attention, because you've got to look at the pictures. And I think now we're proving that it's not quite the magic it once had with AI. AI providing what they call AI slop. And it might have an interesting point to it, but you've got an AI voice, you've got an AI script, and then you've got this AI imagery, which is bland and uninspiring. And I think that actually, it doesn't matter how good it gets at doing it, it hasn't got the spark of a real human. And I think that's where audiences will eventually move away from it, and video will end up not as good, even though it can be remarkable, as something unique as a silly old podcast like this. I don't know, but I certainly hope so. Anyway, I've prattled on. Thank you for listening. I will talk to you anon. Until next time, goodbye.